Back now for another Habs 365 Draft Podcast. I'm Brian Wild, along with, as always, Grant McKay. And today is a very special day. Happy birthday to you.
Okay, that's
happy.
Enough.
Oh, yeah, okay. Happy 25th, I think it is, for Grant McKay.
No, I'm hitting my 30s now, admit it.
Oh, you are. Well, you still got some years left in the NHL as a defenseman, but your days are finished as a forward.
Yeah. Oh, no, apparently I'm washed up.
Yes.
Once you hit, you've been traded for PK. Once you hit 30, you're washed up.
That's right. Don't tell Zdeno Chara that. He's like 42. And
yeah,
I just noticed yesterday, I was looking at the plus minus in the league, and I got an old man brain. So old, in fact, I know David Pastrnak Boris during my on-camera last night. I called him Boris Pastrnak. But anyway, I was looking at it. So I don't remember if Zdeno Chara is one, but he's two or three or four, but somewhere in there in plus-minus in the National Hockey League at 42 years of age.
The stat-ass old fossil still understand, yeah.
We're not allowed to mention that one anymore. I keep forgetting. Every time somebody hits me on that, I say, yeah, we all know the limitations of that stat. So, I got it. Right. There are better ones. Or you love the Corsi. It's okay. I love the Corsi too. But you don't have to be priggish anytime someone mentions it. Anyway, I'm off on a tangent already.
Plus minus still is important when it's, when you're ahead of everybody else or behind everybody else. Like, it does tell a story.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. And from a comparison point of view, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because all stats do that, really.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, somebody could say he's having an amazing season. He's got 52 goals. Well, in 1987, that was a pretty good total. In 2017, that's unbelievable, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just completely so, all relative to the year, the hockey they're playing. I mean, if somebody hears Bobby Orr was 123.
Yeah.
he was 123, 127 was his plus minus one year?
That's Josh Brooke territory. That's pretty crazy.
That's right. How is that going? You've been monitoring that. Josh Brooke, of course, second-round draft choice. Who has a plus-minus number for a very good team, admittedly. But like you argue with people that come back at you.
Or the Bruins.
He's on a really good team. You reply with, something very logical about, compare it to the rest of his mates on that team.
Yeah, that's right. He'd be, projected over a season, he'd finish about plus 40 higher than anybody else on the team. So, it's all relative, as you say. But, he had another plus three the other night, and he's I think it's amazing that he's played half the games anybody else, and he's top 10 in plus minus in the league, So, but far and away the best plus minus per game average so far this season in the WHL. So I think that tells you a story too, right?
It's
pretty effective.
Absolutely. And you'd love to talk about it more, but someone always hassles you about the stats as soon as you do. Listen, nobody's talking about this guy, though, Grant.
Glass is always half empty in Habland these days.
That's a good point. If there's anything good, you're just struck down very quickly. People aren't talking about him much. You're the first one who mentioned him when you went to Toronto to cover the rookie camp, and he got injured early, and how disappointed you were because you wanted to see him. And I remember at the time thinking, okay, pretend you know him. what I mean? Because I barely had heard of his name, except for, of course, at the draft table when my first response was usually how it is when you get to the second round. But you love this guy, and you love his upside. You think he can become somebody?
Well, he's not the biggest guy, or he's not Erik Karlsson, or the fastest player, but he's really, really good in all the skill levels. Like, they are well above average, and he's very smart, and that's always a very important asset in a defenseman. I find that sense is sometimes, you know, people don't always necessarily either know or pay attention to that part of it, but to be an effective NHL defenseman, you have to play a smart game. You know, read the play well, have poise, and he has all those things. I like that for the last year and a half, he's played like 30 to 35 minutes a game, just about it, under Tim Hunter, who knows the defensive game. I mean, won a cup with Calgary back in the day. Tough guy, but has an appreciation for the defensive side of the hockey game, and Brooke has been his favorite, you know, since probably January last year, actually. So maybe the last year he's played 30-plus minutes a game on average. He's out there every penalty kill, every power play, regular shift, double shifts. So for a team that's the best in the WHL, I mean, you just look at that. You know, his go-to defenseman on a team that rarely loses, that's got a crazy plus-minus, the best in the WHL, it just tells you how effective he is, and that he's got a really good shot at being a top three defenseman in the NHL, I believe.
That reminds me, that last part, mentioning the best defenseman on the best team, one immediately goes to Olievi and Mete. Your mind immediately goes there, and I'm pretty sure Olievi's going to make the league eventually, and the other one already has, so it's a good analogy, I think. Best defenseman on the best team, you among your peers at a certain age, when if you grow at the same rate, you should then translate to be an NHLer.
Yeah, for sure.
Simple as that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's definitely going to be an NHLer. It's just a question of whether he can play on a top pairing or second pairing.
I don't think the Habs would take either of those, man.
Well, for a, you know, pick outside of the top 50, that's...
Yeah, exactly.
It's rare. I mean...
I'll tell you, 15 to 20% rare that they make the NHL. And they're a top three. I mean, that's even more amazing. And I think you went back like 35
exactly.
years to see if there ever was a Victor Mete, someone taken out of the top two rounds that played in the NHL as defenseman at 19. And the answer was never in history. So
yeah,
that Trevor Timmons is shit.
Well,
he's terrible.
Yeah. Well, he did play defense growing up there in our empire in the valley, and you know, who does know the position? I think I mean, the proof's in the pudding.
Maybe that's why he's so amazing at it.
Well, I mean, McDonough, Subban, Brooke, Mete, he's made some dandy picks. And
Strite,
all of them,
Strite was a real off one.
I mean, what
was that, seventh round?
Yeah, exactly. And Tiska is really coming on for a fifth rounder.
Yeah.
6'3" defenseman that can skate very well. I watched him last night, and I mean, they went from not using him anywhere near the ice in a defensive situation to having him out against the Steenberg and Hepaniemi line, which is, you know, arguably the best line in junior hockey. He was out there face-to-face against them all night, and I don't know that they scored a goal with him
nice.
On the ice. And he's had a point per game the last 18 games on top of that.
Wow.
So for a fifth-round kid, he's coming along pretty well, and next year him and Walford and Brooke are going to be definitely three of the best defensemen in the league next year. I know Brooke already is this year, but next year promises to be even better for these kids as they, you know,
these
their
kids are
final year
plus
of junior.
One there. Yeah, these are draft plus one kids that are already, you know, finding themselves in major roles on their teams. Never mind what the upside is. And people forget that too, eh? Draft plus one, draft plus two, vastly, vastly different for these kids. And when they can have when they can have draft plus two profiles in draft plus one, they're clearly ahead of the curve already.
For sure. And yeah. Fleury, everybody's going to get a chance to see Cale Fleury at the Memorial Cup. And he's really playing good hockey. It's funny, he was minus 61. Here we go back to the plus minus here.
Right. I remember that. And everybody was, how good can this guy be?
Well, right. But the team was absolutely horrible. It was one of the worst junior teams of the past two decades. So, you know, you had to look past that and look at the player. He was a good player on a horrible team. Well, he gets traded to Regina this year, and now in 28 games, he's plus 16 with Regina.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's on pace to be like plus 45 or something like that this year if he was here all year. So that's a 100-point swing. And, you know, is it that he's improved that much? No, it's because of the teams that they played on to a certain extent. He's proven up and above that it's not that he was a poor, you know, he had poor sense or he was poor defensively. It was simply just a horrible team, a good player on a horrible team. And, there's four defensemen from the draft that all have a good chance of playing in the NHL. I mean, they may not all make the Habs because there's only so many spots.
Mm-hmm.
But it also means they have tradable assets down the road too, you know. Maybe one of them can be part of a package for a center if that becomes a need. You can never have too many assets. You have to be a chess player. You have to be able to move them around. David Poile is probably one of the things about him that's underrated was, like, for years he keep picking defensemen with a high pick, keep grabbing them. Well, you're stockpiling them. People say, well, you don't need defensemen. Why are you doing this? Well, he used Seth Jones to get Ryan Johansson.
Right.
I mean, you don't draft for the day. You draft for years down the road, and things can change. So it's
and that's why you pick the best player available.
Exactly. Yeah, you do. And
everybody says, well, you need a defenseman. Why did you take that winger? And that could very well be the case this draft for the Canadiens. And then the answer could be, well, Zadina was available, and Zadina was the best player, and now I can go get a center with that winger when the best player I took is amazing.
Right.
Which is essentially Jones-Johansson, though I don't really like that trade, if I'm being honest. I know they needed a center, but Seth Jones, you know, he's going to be one of the Norris finalists, I think, this year.
Well, Johansson is playing as a first-line center. They didn't need him, so.
He's got five goals.
And look at their defense.
Yeah, they don't need a fifth one there, is what you're saying. They've already got, you know, the best four, top four in the NHL.
But that was because, you know, he kept drafting.
Yeah,
defense.
I hear you. Now, I'm not knocking down the philosophy one bit, but to look at the trade, I really think Seth Jones is spectacular. But, you know, like we talked about the other day, I think we were texting each other, there are 21 first-line centers in the NHL.
Yeah, that's right. And Jones,
there are 10 teams that don't even have one. So it's when you have a chance to get one, you need to seize it.
And to be fair, yeah, Johansson doesn't have a lot of goals, but when you compare points to points since they've been traded and – I mean, Jones doesn't exactly light it up. I have him in a pool, believe me, I know.
Oh, sorry about that.
he's not leading the league in scoring or anything like that as defenseman, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's good, but Johansson's good, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they both need. That's right.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here because that's what I do. You are Trevor Timmins, and you're drafting fourth.
Oh, boy. Excuse me. I got to go to the gym.
Who do you take?
Drafting fourth?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it depends on who goes two and three.
Okay. Dahlin has gone one, of course.
Yeah.
And who would you hope is not taken at four?
Well, that's where, I mean, it's whatever, whoever's left is fine. I mean, it's going to be either Boqvist, Tkachuk, or Zadina, and I mean, any of the three.
Okay.
Any of the three works for me.
Okay.
Boqvist,
that's the answer
I was
looking for.
I keep hearing Erik Karlsson for Boqvist as a comparison, and that he's even better than Karlsson was at the same age defensively, for sure, but similar offensive, similar type skills on the offensive end. So tell me that wouldn't look good on the Habs blue line going down
right.
the road.
If Boqvist is taken 2 or 3 and the Habs draft 4,
mm-hmm.
do they take the third-ranked defenseman there, which might be Dobson, or did they take the best winger there, which would maybe be Zadina?
Although, at that point, they'll go with mm-hmm. Zadina, I think, or Tkachuk.
Okay.
I mean, you look at...
And then the philosophy is what you were just saying. You have to take the best player available, and the best player, Zadina, for example, could translate out to, okay, was strong at the wing, he's shown his skills, he's developed, he's been what we expected, now we can go get a defenseman that was better than the Dobson that we would have been committed to.
Right. Well,
right.
I mean, the Habs have needs at wing center and defense, you know.
So everywhere?
I mean, they don't have a power forward. They don't mm-hmm. have the Tkachuk that, I mean, they're trying DeLaurier on the first line.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty grim.
He's definitely a poor man's Tkachuk. I mean,
right.
Tkachuk can actually score in front of the net, and he'll get the puck in the corners. Like, that's what they need with Durant and Galchenyuk is, you know, a Zadina or a Tkachuk that can go get the puck for them,
mm-hmm.
make space,
mm-hmm.
be tough, win those battles when somebody gets rough with Durant or whatever.
And finish Durant passes.
Get in front of the net, screen the goalie, you know, past his midsection. screen his face. Well, Gallagher, you know.
Right.
But, and you know, get the garbage goals in front of the net when he can't be moved because he's just too big. They need that as much as they need anything right now, other than maybe a first-line center. But then there's also the point that ideally they're looking for a left defenseman, I guess, to be paired with Weber. I don't know, you don't normally look position-wise on that front, but I believe all the Habs top defensemen, other than Mete going forward, are righties.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that Dobson, unfortunately, is a righty as well.
Juleson.
And Juleson, is Petrie?
Yeah,
Petrie. Anyway.
Right. Yep,
yeah.
You're right, yeah. No,
so
you're absolutely right, yeah.
They're all right.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, but as I've said, you know, like, you're drafting for 3-4 years down the road. So you take the best one. And I've seen Dobson play on both sides equally well. So it's not like he couldn't. But then, you know, you've got
to stick
both on the...
Would they push him over to the left? Like thinking down the line? Like,
Dobson?
Would they say, listen, we've already drafted you. We're going to talk to his coach. Tell Hunter to move him over to the left side. That kind of thing. Would that ever happen?
Well, like I say, he's already plays quite a bit on the left, but
okay.
I mean, it's just the unfortunate thing is that if you have two guys with their sticks facing one way, right?
Yeah, right.
You,
it's not optimal.
It's not. It's not perfect.
Yeah.
You like to have the different them shooting different opposite ways, you know.
Right, because now you've got reach. Now you got reach.
Right, that's right. That's right.
Right, you've got a what's the word? It's a straight line across.
mm-hmm.
You've got a radius. Is it radius? You've got a radius that's bigger from left to right in that circle.
that'll work.
That was a tangent probably nobody needed for me to go off on. All right, Grant, I put you on the spot. I've made you Trevor Timmons. Now I'm going to make you Mark Bergevin. Ready? You're Mark Bergevin, and yesterday we heard from Elliot Friedman when he was on Calgary Radio that one of the busiest, if not the busiest GM right now, manning the phones is, as he seems to always be, Mark Bergevin.
Yeah, you hear
and
that
it was
every
suggested
year.
That when Elliot was asked who is untouchable, he said probably Mete, probably Price. So you're the manager now. Do you trade Alex Galchenyuk? Because I imagine his value is higher than it's been in the last two and a half years as the leading scorer of the Montreal Canadiens, who seems to have really found his game again.
Well, if you trade Galchenyuk, or sorry, if you trade Pacioretty, you still need a scoring winger, do you not? I don't know that you trade both of them. I mean, presumably.
So the first one to get the best offer?
Just the best offer for Pacioretty, and you keep Galchenyuk.
Okay.
I don't know. Do you think his value's really gone up that much?
A little bit. Not a ton, no. No, not a ton. But some.
There's still worries out there that.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know that you'll ever get the value that you hope that you can get maybe down the road with his potential. Like, people are a little leery to get an inconsistent kid, you know?
Yeah.
And
what about Pacioretty? Do you think that this 7 goals in 7 games has upped his value?
Sure. Hard not to. When you go 20-some with one?
Two. In 1-14, 2-22,
yeah. Wow.
And now 7-70.
How could it not
on fire?
How could it not be better?
Right.
And it could be 8. You know, I think they took one away from him there, the Jarabek one. So really, it's 8 goals in 7 games. So all of a sudden,
does it make you afraid to trade him?
He's on pace for 25 again.
Mark,
no.
Does it make you afraid to trade him? No.
No, it just ups his value as far as I'm concerned.
What do you think his value is? The Twitter sphere is, I think, quite optimistic.
Well, it can be, yeah.
Because what people focus on is that he's had a 39-goal season, that he's been very consistent at 30 to 40, and what they don't, and then so they look at that past, and forget that someone would be trading for his future. And his future is that the goal total is going lower, and his future is unrestricted free agent freedom in a year. So they're basically trading for 2 playoffs at best. And then some anxiety whether they can keep him. So you got to be a little bit careful if you're a GM. You can't just sit there and go, a first, my best prospect, and a roster player. You know, that's not going to happen, folks.
And as I was I had an exchange with our buddy there, Rick Swingetti, a couple days ago, and it's like he's talking about that, like he has the value that he has because of his contract, but I think a teams at the trade deadline are trying to pick up players that are going to help them win in the playoffs. I think that's their main. I don't think they're picking up a player for his contract. They're picking up a player that's going to help them win.
This year
playoffs.
Especially,
and
the contract is irrelevant.
Yeah, I believe so.
No one is up against the cap from that day in March until 45 days later at the end of the season. There are no cap issues this year for anyone. Because it's prorated for the year. You're not adding the whole, 4.5. You're adding a portion of that. So unless you're, banging up against that thing every single day. Like, right now, the Canadians, everybody says they got $9 million because that's what they started this season with. Well, they've been playing without that $9 million for the whole year. They actually have, $13, $14 million right now to spend with. They might even be higher than that. I mean, they're obviously not. Maybe they could even pick up a bad contract in order to also get a draft choice from someone. But, is you're right on that account. You know, Rick is right for next year if somebody's up against it, but the cap is stretching out $5 more million. So again, you know, even the Oilers, who we thought were in serious cap issue when McDavid gets his big money next year, they're not up against it anymore either because of the additional $5 million. So well, when I was talking last year about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and the money issue and everything, it's blown out now. That additional $5 million off Las Vegas, that franchise has made way more than anybody thought, and it's blown up the cap and increased it by a significant margin. Nobody's up against the cap, really. Not an issue.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that a team that's going to trade young assets is not going to be a team that's – it's going to be a team that's contending. Like, I don't think Pacioretty's going to go to a non-playoff team.
100%.
So they're looking for someone that is going to help them win in the playoffs. Maybe Pacioretty can do it in the playoffs for the first time. He can, you know, produce like a 30, 35 goal score in the playoffs, but he hasn't in the past. So there's also that.
Yeah, that's his production has dropped 25%. I did a study on it when people were talking about it a lot, and I thought it was harsh, and I was wrong. He drops 25%.
He averages out to a 22 goal scorer. I did the math the other day.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's a big drop.
That drops his value.
Yeah.
For it to a certain extent. And he's at the dreaded, he's going to be 30 next year. We know, again, you look at the trends on the forward, once they hit
that's
30.
Ugly. It's ugly.
Yeah. It doesn't go up as a rule. But I think, you know, this 7-goal-in-7-game thing, people look at it and say, put him with a bona fide center for the first time in his career.
Can you imagine if he actually did have a bona fide center and it was like, holy shit, he's just turned into Josh Bailey or Anders Lee? I mean, Josh Bailey and Anders Lee are no Max Pacioretty, but playing with John Tavares, they look like they're double Max Pacioretty talent.
Well, I mean, he could maybe catch fire, and you think, well, geez, we could use that.
Yeah.
So,
if it's really going to be intriguing. If you're Mark, what are you trying to get?
Young potential top two center that might have
one upside.
First center upside.
Is that all?
And then the rest is gravy. Oh no!
That second round draft choice.
First or second? Yeah.
Here's my
maybe another prospect.
Heard it before. Here's my and fans listening to us are going to go, come on, really? That's it? Because I know that they think it should be, you know, like a first, a prospect, and a roster player. Mine is if he gets a potential number one C with a downside of a 2C and a second-round draft choice, that would be excellent for a guy who only has a year and a playoff left. So for me, the ultimate trade, you know what it is, it's a second-round draft choice and Robert Thomas. And that's plausible for a St. Louis team that hasn't won since 67 and needs top six forward help. It's a plausible trade, especially with St. Louis's depth. You know it better than I, but, I mean, they got a lot of names.
What I'm looking at, and they have to get rid of salary to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They've got this Laterra guy, right, that they got from – it was part of the Philly trade for Shand.
Right.
Well, he's making like $4.5 million or something like that. And
He has stunk the joint out this year. And does his contract end this year, or would they have to keep it for another season? Because I can see where you're coming from. It's also take that crappy contract, please.
Exactly.
And then maybe get
a higher draft pick. Then, you know what I'm saying? Second and the first, Thomas Laterra for Pacioretty.
And Laterra is the pain you take. And is Laterra finished after this year, or does he have another year left?
Oh, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Even if they got
I don't care if Molson had to pay $10 million.
Right, now. Right. Even if you hate the guy, just buy him out and get rid of him, but do it.
Exactly.
Oh, I like that's a great idea.
But he's a center, and he's produced in the NHL before. Who knows? He might be the Habs first line center for a year.
You know? Until Thomas.
Well, yeah, you know, like he could. I mean, he could play on the Habs at center. It's not like the Habs are too strong at center, right?
Maybe what I recommend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I recommended in an article, I don't remember which one, old man memory, but I suggested that maybe that four pick they could swap out for a center. Is there anyone that you can think of in my conceptual idea that fits that?
Well,
because like we said, there only are 21. First line center, so it's not as if anybody would even think that would be a good idea to swap out a four for that.
Right. Well, yeah, you're not getting a future first line center at four in the draft.
Like for instance, here, let me give you a hypothetical. You ready? Ryan O'Reilly leads the league in faceoffs, 64%, 63 somewhere in there. I like Ryan O'Reilly. Is he worth a four pick, or the five pick, or wherever they go?
How old is he now?
Oh, I'm not very good at age. I want to say 27.
Yeah. He's somewhere between 27 and 30, is he not?
If he's closer to 30, I don't do it myself. But if he's 27...
No, I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that? Too old, huh?
For Ryan O'Reilly? Oh,
yeah.
No, he's not a first-line center.
No, he's not. That's why I'm saying, I mean, where are we, Mark? You enjoying me having me call you Mark? Where are we, Mark, on what we value that four pick? Like, is that four pick, five pick, wherever it is, potentially even better than Ryan O'Reilly?
Oh, yeah. And I think they're in rebuild, retool mode, so you don't get rid of it.
You're right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That makes no sense because
you're getting a first liner, whether it be a defenseman or a winger.
Right, with the four, and you're building.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, no, you're right. So he has to be even younger than. So then it doesn't really make sense. You know, the more you think about it, it doesn't make sense. You want that centered so desperately, but you're getting a seven-year asset, and you might switch it out for a one or a two, which maybe makes sense for the St. Louis Blues, who were trying to make their fans excited about a first cup run in 67. But for the Montreal Canadiens, it doesn't make sense. It's almost like doing a Pacioretty-style trade and then, like, flipping it over and doing a non-Pacioretty-style trade.
The Habs basically traded a top 10 pick for Drouin.
But Drouin in 22-19
was a year,
troubled with that.
Because he was a year after his draft, Sergachev, right? Mm-hmm. No, I'm just to do the math. So you want a 22-year-old center? Well... What was Drouin when they got him? 22-year-old forward.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he was a top five pick.
Yeah.
So it cost them. It cost them a top 10.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even a top five, right?
Right.
So it's even more valuable.
So you're
going to trade Puljujärvi for Drouin? Yeah. Like you're going to trade Tkachuk? Like it just. Yeah. You just, they're not going to trade their top five pick. If they have a top five pick, you get them so rarely.
Yeah.
And it's the only way that you get possible first line franchise type players at their position. No, they're not trading it. It would have to absolutely be, it'd have to be like Draisaitl. It'd have to be a former top five pick that's like 22.
Oh, okay.
It's the only way it's going to happen. And do you see Edmonton doing that? No.
No.
You know, let's get rid of Draisaitl to get Sedina. That doesn't.
Oh, okay. Not Ryan O'Reilly. I got one. Would you do it for Ryan Nugent Hopkins?
Pass.
See, the reason
top five
I agree
pick
with
for
all...
Ryan Nugent Hopkins. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, and the reason I agree with you on that is how many years that person is an asset. And this is why I hated the argument that became popular that somebody on TSN 690 was espousing over and over again. That drove me nuts because it was illogical. I won't name him. But he kept saying that you've just given up the youth of a player, and one is 22 and one is 19, and that's significant. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Because, yes, one's 22, one's 19, but it's completely irrelevant because you just signed one for 6 years, and the other guy is a seven-year asset. So there's only 1 year difference. But if we move out down the curve to the end of the six and seven, I can certainly see Jonathan Drouin staying in his homeland and wanting to become a Montreal Canadian for his career than I could ever see Mikhail Sergachev saying, yes, I would like to continue on here in Montreal now that I'm free to make 18% less than I would in Dallas, a.k.a. Alex Radulov. So down the line, the chances of Sergachev staying beyond his seven were very poor compared to Jonathan Drouin staying beyond his six. So let's throw the ages out the window here, because all it's really about is not age between 22 and 19, but years of service. And years of service, I absolutely feel guaranteed that Jonathan Drouin is staying longer than Sergachev ever would have wanted to lose 18% per year on taxes, which is another thing that drives me crazy in terms of Radulov left because his feelings were hurt. Come on. Are we that stupid?
And Nugent
Hopkins. You think the guy had his feelings hurt, so he passed up $5 million? You hurt my feelings, you know. Come on.
And Nugent Hopkins is 25?
Yeah,
25-ish.
I can't find the guy. I think you found the only guy, Draisaitl, that makes any sense at all to give up an 18-year-old with 7 years and top four.
Right, and it'd probably cost you another asset too,
which makes it even more illogical.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Mark, you sold me on that. But, I was a little bit on the I was on the 50-50, but Mark, you really sold me how stupid that would be. We got it.
Speaking of Sergachev, can I have a little?
I know what you want to say. Go ahead. I've seen it myself without Hedman. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, all of a sudden, he doesn't have the, what a lot of scouts think is the best defenseman all around in the league right now in Hedman. I mean, and you look at Tampa since Hedman went down, they're very ordinary, aren't they? Wow. And so with Sergachev, he's been brutal defensively on quite a few. I'm seeing things that I saw last year that concern me. The defensive lapses, the casualness, the getting caught up ice, getting beaten like a drum. Saw that way too much last year, and it's why he got traded. There were concerns. I mean, the guy's got, when he's got the puck on his stick and in the offensive zone, sure. You love him, but then when he doesn't, he makes those bonehead passes. He makes those bonehead decisions. He stands around when, you wonder, what's he doing? I'm seeing quite a bit of that. And Hedman, the 6'6 defenseman with the reach that skates like the wind's not there to back him up. It's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of have fans just look at the stats and think, well, he must be playing absolutely fantastic, but certainly it's still the most important thing of a defenseman is your play away from the puck, because you don't have it 80, 90% of the time. And Sergachev by no means is a finished product in that regard. So just another little thing, because we love to trash Drouin and how he hasn't worked out as the first line center yet and stuff. Well, got to be patient with him. And you also have to be patient with Sergachev, because he's by no means flawless either.
And Grant, he had a tremendous amount of sheltered minutes at the beginning of his season on an amazing, amazing hockey team. And your matchups, if you start in the offensive zone all the time instead of the defensive, your partner, I mean, all of these things are part and parcel of success.
All of a sudden, they don't, they can't do those matchups as much because they lost a 30-minute a night defenseman.
And
so
may I add one
there.
Other point, too?
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a Tampa Bay game, and his assistant coach was trying to talk to him after a really bad shift.
Yes.
And they were on the bench, and he leans down, you know, a coach leans down, and he puts his arm over him and tries to warmly kind of tell him a thing that's going to help him long term. And I think coaches, I used to teach, and I always realized that the faster I could get in with that information on a student, the better it was for their learning, because it was really fresh, their experience. And I think the coaches on the bench have that same philosophy, right? You know, if I can tell you what you did wrong there super fast, maybe you'll learn it better. But anyway, so the coach, and apologies, yeah. I don't know who it was, he leans in, and Sergachev gives him this look that basically says, go F yourself. So that's not what you're looking for when you're 19, if you have the philosophy that you know everything already.
That's something that we saw from Galchenyuk too often, too. In this,
sure. And you know what? I got to tell you something on that front. I've been looking at that a lot
lately. Changed.
At practice. Yes. Yes.
He has. He's maturing.
He's changed. It's incredible.
Yeah.
You've noticed it too? Absolutely.
Yeah, I have.
I've seen Claude come up to him at practice, and I'm going, here we go. Because I've been watching him for years. And
yeah.
Instead, he's putting his head up and down. And he's really warm to what Claude is saying. And they've got a really
yeah.
nice relationship with each other. I'm happy he noticed it, too. I think he's coming along. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the light bulb went off in the maturity process. I mean, he was
yeah.
a kid, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's
mm-hmm.
still just 23. So, yeah, I've noticed it for sure. But you noticed
yeah.
it. You know, you certainly noticed in the past where just the body language, when somebody was trying to, Muller or whoever was trying to say something to him on the bench, he'd argue, he'd have that look of pain on his face, like, what? He'd always disagree, or you
mm-hmm.
thought he'd, that was immaturity. And I think it's sinking in. And so that's another reason why I don't think that they're going to trade him. I think that they're happier with him. In that sense, and that he's getting it, and you know, he's there, you see more effort on the ice.
Yeah. Who are your untouchables?
Oh, it's always remained Price and Weber.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd still trade Galchenyuk too if you can get that piece, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if it costs.
A lot of fans said Gallagher. That they'd be very
yeah.
angry if Gallagher wasn't an untouchable piece.
Mm. Well, again, if you can get that, the Habs have so many good, hardworking, undersized wingers that you can, I think you can get away with trading Gallagher.
Gallagher?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, Lekkonen's almost like the finished version, you know.
What do you think on that front? I wanted to ask you about that. Is this getting concerning? I mean, he had no shots last night, and it just feels like he's not around the net at all anymore. Is this a concern,
yeah.
or is this a sophomore jinx, and next September he's back to season one?
What do you think of that Hudon pass when he had it?
Yeah.
Tell me
yeah.
that he's got confidence right now?
Yeah.
I'm
no.
starting
breakaway, who can I pass this to? I don't want to shoot.
Unfortunately, I'm starting to wonder if Hudon has an NHL career, you know.
Like mentality, you mean?
Oh, I just don't know that, you know, if you can't find someone better. I mean, he works, but, I mean, he's a 5'10 forward that's not producing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm starting to get concerned.
Well, you won't get any return for him right now.
Well, I don't know what his, you know, where do you fit him on a good team?
McPhee wasn't interested in him, and
no.
that doesn't mean anyone after this season is more interested in him.
Yeah, well,
I mean, we've liked a lot of his moments, but the bottom
oh,
line
for
is
sure.
the goal and the assist total, and
yeah,
that
yeah.
that
size
is you're a forward. You know, you're yeah, exactly. You're a forward without size, so you're not there as the F1 banging. Who
no.
lose the second assist a lot. You're the guy who's
I mean,
paid
you
to finish.
You got Shaw, Lehkonen, Gallagher, Byron, yep. Salt. Like, you got a lot of the same thing. That's why they got rid of Andrighetto. When he's starting to there are some similarities to what Andrighetto, you know, just wasn't quite productive enough for his size to beat out these other guys for that top six spot or maybe even top nine spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sherbach's going to pass him next year.
I think so. Sherbach, I think, is third in the AHL in points per game.
Right. And, I mean, De La Rose down the road is probably going to be a better fit as an NHL winger. He just brings things that Hudon doesn't bring. And Hudon, I don't know that he's going to be any more productive than De La Rose in a couple of years. So,
well, I'm hoping, and I'm thinking it's still a lack of confidence, you know, that he's going to get that breakaway when he's got more confidence and he's going to shoot the puck. And I think the same thing of Drouin. Do you see Drouin with 3.5 minutes left in the game last night?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was an unbelievable play.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah,
he's skating through the zone. He's keeping his feet moving. He beats 2-3 guys. He finally gets himself into an optimal prime shooting position. It looks glorious. I've seen him put it into the top corner a million times when he's gotten that moment. And he passes it basically to the boards laterally to no one.
Yeah.
I mean, he had an amazing chance, and he subverted it for a nothing chance. And that's 100% confidence. And when you get that back, you see the type of thing that's on YouTube for Jonathan Drouin as far as excitement goes, you know, like holding it for 30, 35 seconds and potting an absolute beauty. A lot of this game's confident. And I think Drouin is going to find it. And I actually think that Drouin is going to find it too.
Well, look at his stats. Junior, AHL. He's never scored 30 goals at a lower level. I don't think he is a natural goal scorer. 27's nice. You got that once in the AHL, but never scored 30. I don't believe he ever scored 30 goals in junior.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not a natural goal scorer. He's just not. And, I mean, we're seeing this at the NHL level. I like his creativity. He's got some creativity. But even that has started to wane a bit. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know what his spot is on. You know, 2 years down the road, do I think he's got a guaranteed top nine spot? You look at potential. You look at who could be in the lineup. They pick up another forward. Sherbach comes in. Maybe another winger beats him out. He's gone. He's not in the top nine. He's not a fourth liner. We'll see. I think
the team projects
out
nicely. I like
Lehkonen better.
Yeah. I think the team projects out nicely for next year, and here's why. Everybody thinks that this doldrum is going to last for a very long time, but I think that a lot of things that have happened this year don't necessarily have to happen next year. Mete for a full season, I really like what he's going to bring going forward. Jolson joins the team after a year in the American Hockey League, and I think he'll be a regular. Now, already the team is better at moving the puck up, so that's a significant difference. Lehkonen, there's no way he has another two-goal season. He's going to bring you more, and I think he can recover even to 15. Hudon, I believe in.
Yep.
Drouin, definitely, in his second year, has the potential to do a Taylor Hall, where he was not good in his first year with his new team either, but always was an amazing player that found his groove at the right age, where one often finds their groove. So there are a lot of – those are five or six improvements just – Sherbach joins the team. Those are six improvements right off the hop. And that's without any kind of real positive surprises that can happen too. So now what have you lost? You know, you can't just say, okay, here are your positives, what are the negatives? When you look at the negatives, you've got Plekanec will be gone. And he's been a very good defensive forward. So that's a negative, but Dano can then assume that role. And so you're all right there. So that's one. And then I can't think of another one where they really, you know, find themselves much weaker. I think they project out very positively. Now, I'm not saying they get back to 103 points. But I really can't see them drafting fourth overall for 2 years in a row.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I look at the lineup. If Chirbac, I think, beats out Hudon next year for a top nine spot. You've got Byron. You know what he brings. You've got Gallagher.
And he's consistent.
You've got Lekkonen. You've got Galchenyuk. You've got the only guy he could beat out possibly is Shaw. And you know that Shaw brings a little more, even if he's been inconsistent.
Well, I think
he scores
third on the team in goals, Shaw.
That's right.
So, you know, you don't discard your third best goal scorer.
And even Delorier. Is Hudon playing better than Delorier? Hard to argue that he is.
I said the other day that Delorier should be offered a contract for next year. You would agree? I think they can use him. And when he took on Wilson and beat him up, I think that makes other people taller. I know it's old school, and, you know, people are going to say to me it means nothing, but I think it's an intangible that does mean something.
Delorier is one of the best fighters in the NHL.
He is, and I don't think it hurts. I don't think it hurts. Unless they don't allow fighting, you can use a good fighter.
I mean, Claude obviously loves him. He has him out on the PK all the time. He's got him on the first line in PK. Yeah, I'd say there's a spot on the Habs for, in a Claude Julien lineup for sure for Delorier. And he brings size and competitiveness that no one else does.
And a local hero,
but
actually,
the combination.
On the side.
Yeah, sure. He's won me over. I mean, I loved it when I saw him in Laval. I said, holy jeez.
How's Redmond
and everyone?
How's Zach Redmond doing?
Yeah, there's a...
You made another good
silver lining. If there's a silver lining this year, and I guess, Schlemko for a fourth or whatever,
Yeah.
That's a pretty good deal.
I think though the hard decisions, and just to wrap this up, I think we've gone a long time here, but it's been fun. I think that the hard decisions are going to actually be on the blue line core, because I do see that ultimately needing to change. If they're going to change the rules on you, and it's going to be interesting to see if they keep doing this in April and May, or are we back to so much holding and slashing that suddenly, an Alsner and a Ben would be valuable. I'm very interested in seeing what April does. Because these guys have had the guts to call it a certain way to change the composition talent level of an Alsner and a Ben. But will they do this in April and May? Do they have the guts to call the 2-minute slash in a 2-2 game in game 6 of a playoff series? Do they, right? Or do we go back to old-time hockey and suddenly, the Alsner and Bens of the world who are contained defensemen and valuable if they're not being, turnbuckled at the blue line because they can't do anything about the fast-forward pass.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
It always tightens up.
It always tightens up. And the officiating changes. Mike Johnson is the guy I love, and Mike Johnson says he's already seeing it at the in between the benches where he watches the games when he's broadcasting. He says,
right.
I'm hearing a lot of stick against stick. I can just hear the sounds changing as the season progresses.
Oh, it happens every year. They start out with the fervor, calling what they're told to call, and then it just the old habits creep back in.
Yeah, they die hard.
And,
don't they?
Yeah. So I think, there's another guy, Ben especially, that I think teams will have some interest in for sure.
Yeah.
For sure, at the trade deadline where you might, you can get a second-round pick for him, I would think.
Well, that surprised me if it was a high
second.
Oh,
no. Oh,
that would surprise
all.
Me. Oh, really?
There'll be teams. Oh, frick, no.
Okay, let's
see. Ben came in and played a top-four role for the Habs last year in the playoffs, and he wasn't too bad. He's played top-four role for the Habs quite a bit this year.
I'm going to go third or fourth if he gets traded. I can't go as high as second. I think Plekanec can fetch a second for
a team that needs
a defensive composition.
Defenseman, the depth, you should look at back at old trade deadlines. He'll fetch a second.
I'm telling you. We'll see.
You can.
We'll see.
Yeah, well, there's been, every year there's, what the heck? Why did they give up a second for that guy?
Yeah.
But
people want that depth going into the playoffs. So.
Well, I'll tell you what. Oh, no, if you finally give Trevor Timmons a chance to actually draft instead of, you know, having 4 years out of six without a second rounder, it could sure make a lot of difference on those. They don't ever develop prospects. Okay.
If Ben was still with the Habs, it's because he didn't, you know, no one offered a second. But I think someone does, and you obviously agree, he's gone. You know.
Yep.
He's gone for a
I think they want to change the comportment of the defense. I think that they, if they call it like this, have come to a light bulb moment where, you know, it's like, okay, we're not fast enough. It's pretty clear they changed the rules on us, and we're not expecting it. And now my guys that were, you know, had protocols that they've been using their entire careers, they're not allowed to do anymore. So that changes how good they are.
That's right.
And then they could be valuable. Yep.
Replaces them. And, you know.
Yeah, and Jolson. And then Brooke down the road, who has the composition of the modern defenseman. So, and then if you're going to keep an old-style guy, you might as well have the best in the entire world in Shea Weber, who is the best shutdown defenseman in the world. So you don't want to have too many of that style, but if you're going to have that style, you might as well have the best one. And you know what? Claude Julien mentioned it last night. He says you never miss Shea Weber more than you miss him when you need to match up against the best line in hockey.
Yeah.
In Patrice Bergeron. So we're sitting there and going, okay, they're killing us. What do I do about it? And I don't have my best shutdown defenseman in
Brody
hockey.
Ben.
You know, to put out there for 30 minutes and neutralize these bastards. So, I mean, that's the way it works. You know, you need a shutdown guy. Everybody pretends that, you know, oh, Shea Weber's old school. Well, you still need to shut down amazing hockey players in the NHL. That's not changing. You know,
still have two nets. Right?
That's your favorite, and I love that one. And my new one is until they put the nets in the corners, you better have a good centerman. I stole that from you. I rewrote it. All right, buddy. Have
okay.
Okay, that's a Habs 365 podcast. Enjoy your Sunday, everyone. Enjoy the football. Let's go, Eagles.